The Late Debate with Sarah McInerney on RTE Radio 1.
Tonight, as the final EU TV debate takes place, who'll have the last word? Co-living, millennial mecca or 21st century tenements? And is it ever right for a doctor to help patients die? All coming up on The Late Debate tonight after the news with Cathy Cregan. Thanks, Cathy, and good evening and welcome to The Late Debate with Sarah McInerney. Joining me tonight on my panel, we have Christina Finn, a political correspondent for thejournal.ie, Alan Farrell, Fine Gael TD for Dublin Fingal, Thomas Byrne, Fianna Fáil TD for Meath East, Paul Murphy, Solidarity TD for Dublin South West, and Pádraig McLoughlin, Sinn Féin Senator. As always, if you'd like to text or contact the programme, you can text us on 51551. You can email latedebate@rte.ie, tweet at late debate RTE, or you can tweet me at Sarah A. McInerney. Now, as we speak, the last of the European election debates is underway on RTE television on primetime, this one for Midlands Northwest. We kept an eye on the first half of the debate and we're going to bring you updates on the second half later in the programme. Christina, you were watching it before you came into studio. I mean, these things go very quickly, really, don't they? Because there are so many candidates.
Yeah, there's quite a few in all the constituencies. So there's, you know, we're coming up to the final days now. I suppose people watching at home, there hasn't been massive standout points, I think, in comparison to other years. A lot of vague statements about, you know, wanting to make Europe better and all the rest. But I wonder whether people have properly engaged up until this point. I'd say in the last couple of days, that's when people will probably start to make their mind up.
I saw Peter Casey in the first sort of quarter hour there was being pressed on his view on whether or not we should leave the EU
or not.
Yeah,
a bit of a confusing
statement. It was. He was pressed and pressed by Dave McCullough. What was the answer that we got from him on that?
He said that, I think, as far as I understood, that he wanted Ireland to get the same deal that Britain gets if it leaves the EU. So whatever that means.
Whether or not we should leave or not, in his mind.
Yeah, he said he's been back and forth on that issue a number of times on Twitter, saying that we should leave and that we shouldn't leave. So I don't know if anyone's much clearer on his position after tonight.
The main issue, apart from that came up, Alan Farrell, was the question of Apple's 10 billion or 13 billion that hasn't been repaid or has been repaid, depending on which way you look at it. Mairead McGuinness being asked, why is this the one issue that Ireland has chosen to fight Europe on?
Well, listeners will have to forgive me that I didn't hear Mairead's response, but from my perspective, we've decided to address that matter in relation to our appeal to the court in Europe on the basis that we believe our legislation is sound in regard to taxation, and we believe that there are steps that have to be taken internationally and not just in Ireland in relation to taxation, that it's applicable in this state, that if there's activity in this state, then the tax is applied, and if the activity doesn't occur in this state, well then the taxation doesn't apply. That's our position, the position of the Revenue Commissioner. So we will await the result of the court decision and take steps thereafter. If we are found to have not applied the appropriate taxation, well then clearly we will the funding in that bank account will be put into
I mean, it's clear that you know, there's a global issue here of you know, wide scale tax avoidance by major corporations, and Ireland has to be very careful in terms of our reputation. We also have to be very careful in terms of, you know, that's support at European level. Obviously, you know, I think there's universal political agreement in Ireland to defend the corporation levels that we have, but we need to make sure they're paid at those levels. And in this case, it was, you know, a tiny, tiny proportion of the 12.5%.
Sinn Féin's candidate, Pádraig McLoughlin, Matt Carty, is there tonight. Now, he hasn't had too many interventions thus far in the debate, but he has come under sustained attack throughout the election campaign to date over the fact that he has refused to rule out running for the Dáil, even if he gets elected to the European Parliament. Do you think that's a sustainable position for him?
Well, there have been many people elected to Europe and then elected to the Dáil over the years. Many, you know.
But many go into one election planning to run for another and
when a person votes in the European election, you're voting for a candidate and there is a substitute list. So in this case, We are putting Sinn Féin's platform on the table. And indeed, if you look at the percentages, if you believe the opinion polls, they're in line with the Sinn Féin political support. So in other words, the levels of support for the three candidates that are in the opinion polls that are published to date are in line with the support for our party. So it's clear to me that
the Sinn Féin voters aren't worried about it.
In my opinion, the vast majority of people who are voting for our candidates are voting for Sinn Féin's policies.
Well, I think, look, I mean, not only is McCarthy planning to go for the Dáil, he's a selected Sinn Féin candidate for the Dáil. That's the reality of it. I think that really, I think when you're going for a political office, you have to decide, this is the office that I want to go to. Yes, people change and whatever, but I've never come across a situation where one candidate, Matt Carty, is running for a European office while planning to run for the Dáil, actively planning and selecting.
Thomas, would you stop? How many candidates have done that in the past? Is that Matt Carty's being honest about it. Yeah.
No,
whereas most candidates will say, I fully intend at this point. In fact,
Councillors in my area on the substitute list who are planning to go to the European Parliament, maybe not serving the county council.
Sir, I'll give you one example.
We need to know who is going to represent us in the European Parliament.
I'll give you one example, just straight away, because of the hypocrisy of Fianna Fáil. 2009, Pat the Cope Gallagher was drafted in to run in Europe as an MEP. And his plan was always to go back to the Dáil. But he was drafted in because they feared they wouldn't win the seat.
This isn't during the campaign. This is the cynicism of a political party.
I think what this is more about is how Fianna Fáil are struggling in that constituency. It's very noticeable that Fianna Fáil have taken this line of attack to divert from their own problems.
But you do have problems there, Thomas, don't you?
It's a perfectly legitimate line of attack. And I was greatly encouraged by Brendan Smith's strong performance in the part of the debate that I saw tonight. I think the Fianna Fáil supporters around that constituency.
Are you going to split the vote again? The way you did the last time. You were one of the people who were affected by that.
Yes, I mean, look, you have to get enough votes as well. I'm confident that we will. I'm confident that Brendan Smith is putting in a really, really strong campaign now to win that seat.
Have you given up on Anne Rabbitt? We haven't given up on Anne Rabbitt.
We have two candidates there. We're asking people to vote one or two in order of their choice. But we're talking about Brendan Smith tonight because he's on the television, he's on the debate. And as what I could see before I committed this
Anne Rabbitt reckons the old guard are out to get her in Fianna Fáil. You're the director of elections for the constituency. Are you the old guard?
I spoke to both candidates today. I spoke to Anne is working really, really hard. She's over there in the west of Ireland in Galway. She's putting up a huge fight there to win a seat. Galway hasn't had an MEP in a long, long time. Brendan Smith is travelling the constituency. He was in Kildare today.
But has Anne Rabbitt been hung out to dry by the party, by the old guard? She thinks she has.
Well, I don't accept that. And I certainly have been speaking to Anne Rabbitt and I've been following her campaign, involved with her campaign, knowing what's going on. She's putting in a really, really strong performance. The only reason I mentioned Brendan Smith first here tonight is because he's on the television.
Paul Murphy, what do you make of debates? Do they make a difference, do you think?
I think they can make a difference, yeah. I mean, I think in general, the election campaign has been very low key. That's the truth compared to even previous European election campaigns. From my memory, for example, I was obviously involved in the European election campaign 5 years ago. 5 years before that, we won the Dublin seat with Joe Higgins. What struck me last night from the Dublin debate was how the left set the agenda, how Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael both were under significant pressure,
that
in particular on the question
by
of
the fact that there were nine of them.
On the question of housing and on the question of the environment. And I thought the strongest performer was Rita Harald, our candidate in Dublin, who I think that would be commonly accepted that she performed incredibly well. And I think will emerge, she's at 4% in the polls. And I think you have a performance like that and you can go up 6-7% in the polls and you begin to enter into the...
Do you think you have a realistic chance of landing a seat in any constituency?
I think Solidarity and People for Profit combined in Dublin now have 7%. If we can get that up substantially and if we can pick up transfers from the many people coming below, I think you can't...
Has the left split the vote in Dublin, do you think?
Absolutely.
Because there are so many candidates.
They split it and then split it again.
Mass left-wing party in this country and could put forward one or two candidates, etc., that obviously will be a preferable situation.
Why don't you talk to each other?
That's clear. We do talk to each other.
A new left
will be built on the basis of substantial social movements.
In the last years,
we've seen in terms of water charges, which obviously gave a significant boost politically to the left. We've seen the repeal movement. We are going to see a massive movement on housing. And I think the government has...
But the reality is in Dublin, Paul, as you say, four seats and there's likely to be, based on the polls, there's likely to be one seat there for Fine Gael, maybe even two seats there for Fine Gael, one seat there for Fianna Fáil, and then two left candidates. Whereas based on the number of candidates and based on the fact that Dublin can be a left voting constituency, if you were more organised and working together, it could be three left seats.
well, instead it, of it potentially also, three centre-right seats.
Well, one thing, I wouldn't say that Fianna Fáil are guaranteed a seat in Dublin, particularly after the performance last night of Barry Anders. I thought he was probably the weakest of the candidates. He made a huge blunder in terms of, he had this comment about it's the best we can do about the fact that there's 4,000 children homeless, etc. I think they did badly. I think the memories of what Fianna Fáil stands for will come back to haunt them. And I hope, to be honest, that the memory of what the Green Party did comes back and has an impact. I think it's positive. Right. Obviously, the Greens are a feature because people recognise correctly the impact of climate change and the need for action. But people should remember it's not that long ago that they brought us into the bailout. They drove those policies.
Wait, they're going to go with the Greens now because they're threatening your chance of any chance of a seat.
Can I just respond to that? Like, I was on TV3 last night, so I didn't see all of that debate. But I mean, the truth is that the debate formats in RTE are geared towards small parties and extreme views. Because I mean, if you run, Fianna Fáil, there were how many candidates on the debate last night? So
10, I think.
Yeah. So that is not representative of the range of opinions in Ireland, okay, to give all of those equal time. Yes, RTE have to be balanced and accept that, but it is not fair to parties.
How would you propose to do it, Thomas?
Well, it is not fair. First of all, I think we need to get
all the Fianna Fáil candidates.
Well, I mean, certainly tonight, I mean, both candidates should be on the television, okay. And if Fine Gael have two candidates, both of them should be on. Why are they excluded? That's because we're a substantial party running two candidates. We're looking for two candidates. I think,
but isn't it refreshing to actually hear views of other people that are from the establishment political parties? Don't I mean? Just because obviously you want to hear your own voices.
Of course they're entitled to be heard.
Some people would like to hear some new ideas, perhaps.
But not to the detriment of parties that have, you know, very large popular support out there.
I don't want to diminish, Thomas.
You know, six or seven candidates somehow represent mainstream opinion.
All right, Alan.
I don't want to diminish the right of individuals to stand in a television debate, but there is an element of false equivalency in the manner in which the debates are being formatted right across the board. I'm not going to isolate RT because TV3 have done it in the past as well.
So what, people who don't already belong to big parties don't deserve to
RT is doing that anyway.
But the point that I would make is that, you know, if a party's on 1%, and the party sitting or standing beside them is on 25%, they're given the same amount of time, they're given the same
are their views not as valid?
To debate. Well, the point
they're
being is
more
that
time.
We have a political system that has what's called the de Hondt method of determining membership of Oireachtas committees.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a very well-known, it's only recently been introduced to the Oireachtas, rightly so, in my opinion. But it gives everybody speaking rights based on the size of
that's when
their
the vote has already
party.
Been taken, Alan, whereas this is a way for people to see what the different views are and cast a vote
we can look
accordingly.
Back to the
how does anyone new ever
nothing would ever change if we look back to the previous nothing would ever change if we look back to the previous election
anyway.
If you were going to, you know, like, it's just good to hear of different point of views. Obviously Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil,
I said I didn't,
sorry,
we need to hear, I said I didn't want to diminish,
the guy who's telling us that Wi-Fi is a health risk when there is absolutely no scientific evidence to back that up. Like, I mean,
he's running for election like everybody else.
But he's not entitled to put forward those views. RT are already telling
some... He's not entitled to put forward those views?
No, not to put forward views that Wi-Fi is a health risk. No, because the scientific evidence doesn't back that.
It's called freedom of speech, Thomas.
Sorry, the scientific evidence. We cannot have people going on, getting a minute on RTE on a debate, making these claims, because there's no scientific evidence to back that up.
He's putting himself forward. Is he not entitled to...
I don't think
as long as he's not generating hate?
But it is also the case that RTE have excluded certain candidates from the debates on the basis that they haven't run for election before. Whatever. So RTE have already put in place some criteria. Well, where's what I'm saying is...
I don't want you making this point, because it sounds to me like the two big parties
From the outset, I said, I don't want to diminish the right of other people to voice their views.
But you want more time for your party.
But I am saying that there is...
And Thomas doesn't want to hear from certain...
There are several different methods. There are several different methods of determining how much time
all
that
right,
individual has.
All right, the message board.
The
well,
yeah, yeah, you, well, I'm visualizing, the you know what I'm visualising? If I could get speaking. What I'm visualising is, remember the fights years ago, Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks, the wrestling, the fake fight? So basically you'd have Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael having a big fake wrestle. A big fake wrestle. And then we'll have a real debate for the rest of the show. I mean, this is just banana stuff. You know, you have to have all voices heard, have a debate, let the voters be making a decision based on what they hear.
All right, Paul, last word to you on this, and then I want to move on.
Yeah, I mean, already the big parties have significant benefits of incumbency. I mean, you know what I mean? If you have a press conference, the media is far more likely to come to your press conference
than to come to our press conference. Be in a position to make a difference and actually implement our policies. All these
advantages already accrue to the establishment parties. The advantages are substantial. And what you're talking about in terms of giving us, say, 3 or 4% of time when you get 25% of time or 24%, that would exaggerate that. And it's an attempt to shut the door on other political forces emerging in order to maintain a political centre.
You can text us on 51551 or tweet at Late Debate RTE. We have been talking about both the Dublin constituency and the Midlands North West constituency. So here's just a reminder of the candidates running. First of all, in the Dublin constituency:
Lynn Boylan, Sinn Féin; Gillian Bryan, Solidarity, People Before Profit; Kieran Cuff, Green Party; Claire Daly, Independence for Change; Mark Durkin, Fine Gael; Francis Fitzgerald, Fine Gael; Gary Gannon, Social Democrats; Ben Gilroy, Independent; Rita Harold, Solidarity, People Before Profit; Alice Mary Higgins, Independent; Herman Kelly, Independent; Tony Bosco Louth, Independent; Aisling McNiff, Independent; Mark Mullen, Independent; Eamon Murphy, Independent; Gemma O'Doherty, Independent; Eilish Ryan, Workers' Party; Alex White, Labour.
The name we heard.
And then the Midlands North West constituency, the debate of which is happening tonight, these are the candidates running:
Cyril Brennan, Solidarity, People Before Profit; Matt Carthy, Sinn Féin; Peter Casey, Independent; Luke Ming Flanagan, Independent; Patrick Green, Direct Democracy Ireland; Dominic Hannigan, Labour; Fidel Mahaly-Eames, Independent; Dilip Maharapatra, Independent; Mairead McGuinness, Fine Gael; Saoirse McHugh, Green Party; James Miller, Independent; Diarmaid Mulcahy, Independent; Olive O'Connor, Independent; Michael O'Dowd, Renew; Anne Rabbitt, Fianna Fáil; Brendan Smith, Fianna Fáil; Maria Walsh, Fine Gael.
All right, we're going to move on, and I want to talk about housing now, because 40 people will share one kitchen, live in bedrooms that are smaller than a disabled parking space, all for the princely rent of over €1,300 a month each. This is the plan in a new co-living housing scheme that has been described as exciting by the Minister for Housing, Owen Murphy. Well, in the Dáil today, Brendan Howland, the Labour leader, excoriated the plan.
The reliance on financial investment also pushes down standards. And we've seen this in this ludicrous co-living proposal. It attempts to normalise cramped living conditions and erode public housing standards that we've spent most of our lives trying to improve. We're going back now to reducing standards so that people can live on top of one another, creating the social crises of the future, instead of deciding that we're going to fix the problem with the same determination as we addressed the economic crisis from 2011 onwards. I don't believe that you firstly understand the issue, and certainly I'm convinced you haven't got the will to solve it.
Don't understand the issue, don't have the will to solve it, Alan Farrell. That's the charge from Brendan Howland to the Taoiseach today.
Blind electioneering on the part of Brendan Howland. And actually, I listened back to the discussion on Sean O'Rourke this morning in relation to the planning application that was referred to during the morning show, and you've just repeated it. And I have to say, I'm quite annoyed. I was annoyed when I listened back to it earlier, and I'm annoyed now, because the planning legislation in relation to such relatively small shared living environments was passed 18 months ago. It is not reinvention of the wheel. It's something that exists in other jurisdictions. The planning application, if it's true, and you were repeating, I believe, an ideologically based, possibly even political orientated lecturer who stated almost verbatim.
Well, no, I'm going off a report in the Irish Times of this.
That's a journalist's interpretation of.
So there's not going to be.
But if you actually look at the regulation passed 18 months ago, first and foremost, this is not reinvention of the wheel. These are
Properties that are successful in other jurisdictions, they are a choice.
We've reinvented the wheel in Ireland.
They are not.
Does anyone
They're not a new concept.
Sorry, are you saying you're not angry because people are going to be forced to share a kitchen with 42 others?
I'm angry because the media reporting doesn't reflect the law.
Sorry.
The law says 2 to 6.
No, sorry. The law says it can be 2 to 6, but it also says it can be something else as suggested.
It's a guideline within the law, actually.
But it also says within the same law, it says if a different planning application is submitted, this could also be looked at.
First and foremost, I'm not going to comment on an active planning file other than to say it is my view that the legislation that was passed 18 months ago in relation to such properties is one tiny part of all of the different suggestions that have been made and that are being enacted in terms of dealing with the housing crisis. If there are properties developed of this type, according to the legislation, they are going to mirror properties that are being developed in lots of other major cities across the world.
Look, I reported on the 18 months ago on the changes in planning regulations. I was at the press conference with Owen Murphy, and one of the questions that popped immediately into my head was, okay, maybe there is a place for some of these in an actual functioning housing market. And second of all, I asked the housing minister, well, if I want to, you know, go and rent one of these, how much is it going to cost, or is there a rent cap on it? Well, no, there's not. So perhaps there is a place for co-living in a functioning housing market. But when this comes into place in a stretched market that it already is, where people in my age, 20s or 30s, who have nowhere, who are queuing up outside to rent houses or rent rooms or things that look like bedsits but aren't bedsits online, they are going to see this as an option and be forced to pay that just to find accommodation.
We have 10,000 people in unsuitable accommodations in this state. There's huge numbers, thousands of individuals in 2, 3, 4, 5 bedroom houses on their own right across this state. So
do you think they're going to be able to afford a co-living apartment which is priced at 700 to 1200 euro per room?
The individuals that are coming in from abroad working, as has been said, the Facebookers, the PayPals, all these companies that have individuals that come here for a period of time and then go off again, individuals in their early 20s.
Yes, I lived in a co-living apartment in London a number of years ago, and I paid £850.
Sorry, that's interesting, Christina, because if you've actually lived in one of these places, what's it like?
In fairness, was 8 people along a dorm. I had my own small room, a little shower that had a toilet, which basically the toilet over the shower. You had your own lock and a tiny little, you couldn't swing a cat in it. I had a living room and I had a kitchen, and I shared it, I think, with 8 people. Now, if it worked for 3 months that I had to do, but I had to pay £850 for it. And I would never have paid that amount of...
But that's
that problem. It's going to end up being...
They're not a solution to that.
This is the most extreme example we've had so far of the government being so wildly out of touch with people on this issue. I mean, they're trying to make a virtue out of these things. So Owen Murphy has a tweet from earlier on saying politicians trying to restrict choice for younger generations is wrong. Like, for Fine Gael to choose this hill to die on in the course of a local and European election is utterly bizarre, because everybody sees it for what it is.
Does it not offer choice, Paul? Do people, for example, like Alan has said, people who are coming in perhaps for only 6 months, for example, on contract, or people who are moving up from somewhere in the country, haven't found somewhere in Dublin to live yet.
It's the same kind of choice that would say, well, let's legalise child labour again. Let's allow young people to work if they want to.
It's not like legalising child labour, but
that idea that it's an option or it's a choice, it's not a choice. It's driven by the market. Those overwhelmingly who will choose to live in these are not choosing because this is the way they want to live. They're choosing because the rents in this country are like 2,000 euros a month in Dublin, 2,000 euros
plus.
You're
not comparing.
It's absolutely incredible. But they've got no alternative.
No.
Should bedsits come back instead of this?
No, it's because of the crazy housing market that Fine Gael has allowed to run wild, so that the landlords have the highest rental yields in all of Europe. And this is about lowering the threshold of basic decency, restoration of bedsits, and it's basically making huge warehouses for people to survive in an utterly miserable condition. Outrageous.
The minister said a number of shameful things today. First of all, that this was exciting for young people. He also said that young people will sacrifice certain things for others. Now, what he's talking about is absolutely outrageous. I mean, you accuse Brendan Howland and Alan Farrell of being political. Owen Murphy and Fine Gael are not being electioneering. They're certainly not electioneering with this, because this is losing votes for Fine Gael all around the country. This is about lowering the expectations for young people. Deliberately in what the minister is saying today, by suggesting that young people would sacrifice certain things.
Did you not?
Sorry. When I was in college, yes, I shared a kitchen with four people. When I first started working, I didn't share, you know, some people share houses perhaps, but they don't share, 42 people do not share kitchens, as has been proposed in this particular development. The media reports of the planning application and in numerous media sources state that 42 units will be sharing kitchens.
Do not land this
on any other party. This is Owen Murphy's idea, supported by you here tonight and by Fine Gael, supported by you and Fine Gael here, that this is something now that you want to drive through to change expectations, to make our young people have even more sacrifices than having today.
At all.
And by suggesting that the aspiration to a home
is not there anymore,
you're going to go down there and wait for someone else to finish your chicken curry before you can put your steak on.
That
is outrageous.
The solution to the housing.
Fine Gael have just completely lost touch.
They're
out of road, and they'll be out of road, and the public will show that this weekend.
Alan.
The housing solutions to the crisis that we're in at the moment in relation to 10,000 people in unsuitable accommodations, to 150 plus homeless individuals in the state, to tens of thousands of people across the state on housing lists, and those who are in rental accommodations.
And what are you doing about it?
Instead of being in the position to actually afford their own home or to be allocated a social home.
I don't understand what point you're trying to make, Alan.
I am making is that there is no one solution that is going to work. We have to try everything. Now, in relation to co-living, it is not going to be something that assists the housing market in any massive way, because it's going to be a tiny number of properties developed, primarily in Dublin, but possibly in other cities.
The problem is Orla Hegarty,
options.
But the problem is Orla Hegarty, who is from the Department of Architecture in UCD. She was on Sean O'Rourke's
this morning.
Yeah, and you're very annoyed about the whole contribution.
Very much so. Yeah.
One of the things that she said is that as soon as you make this available, the problem is it has a knock-on effect because it pushes up land prices, because you have you're a landowner.
It was based on two false premises. The first premise it was based on is that the planning application that has been applied for would be granted. And the second one, it was based on the false premise that the rent could be predicted before at such time as the property the rent per unit. If those two false premises become the narrative for the discussion, we're absolutely doomed.
If you know you can fit in triple the number of people that you would in a normal apartment block, then you're getting triple the rent.
Local authorities operate on density guidelines based on zonings right across this state. I was a councillor for 8 years. I went through two development plans. Each and every town and city and even village in this country has a density guideline based on the type of village that it is. Dublin City's guidelines are slightly higher than most other places, unsurprisingly. The point of all of this is that if such an application were to go into a local authority, it would have to involve the planners making a decision in relation to the entire area as to whether such high density development would be permitted. So there's already safeguards there. So this is not something that's going to all of a sudden pop up.
So it's what? It's never going to happen?
No, I didn't say that.
But so what are you saying?
There would have to be areas within communities in Dublin City Centre and perhaps in Cork and other places
where
consideration could be given to such applications. But we are talking
about warehouses,
application. Yeah. Which has become the source of controversy.
It's the first.
For the purposes of this discussion, everything in that planning application is taken as absolute gospel, and that's not the case.
All right, Bart, we haven't heard from you.
No, I've waited patiently and listened. I mean, what he hasn't dealt with is, and this is what the anger is, and you obviously don't get this, it's just the utter indifference of the minister, how disconnected he is. This is Dublin. I mean, I can tell you where I'm from in Donegal, there's a real housing crisis. But the scale of the crisis in this city, and
the absolute removal of hope from a whole generation of young people that they'll ever be able to own their own home or even afford rent on an increasing basis. It's a disconnect. It's just a disconnect that shocks people.
He would argue, I'm sure, and Alan is arguing tonight, that Fine Gael is looking for solutions. And if you don't like this solution, then what solution do you like? Just as an example now, Paddy from Glasnevin in Dublin 8 has texted in 51551. I'm a Fine Gael voting landlord who's considering switching my allegiance for the first time since 1979 due to the party's management of the private rental market. They abolished traditional bed sits, which are still perfectly acceptable in other European countries, and are now proposing co-living. So is bed sits something that we need to look back at seriously, Pádraig? Because there is a section in the market who need cheaper accommodation and are willing to live in lesser accommodation.
What you have here, I mean, why we have this crisis is that Fine Gael are ideologically a right-wing party, and they believe that the market should solve this problem, and their belief that the market should solve this problem.
But on the point of bed sits, what would Sinn Féin do to help that section of the market that wants to pay less?
I think we have to start whatever about temporary arrangements and all that, but in terms of people's medium to long-term homes, there has to be a threshold of decency. Mm-hmm. There has to be a threshold of decency.
But the Minister's saying this isn't for medium to long-term.
No. What I'm clear about here is that when you look at the comments repeatedly of the Minister and his colleagues, there is a disconnect from the reality of people's lives. And I have to say, in my opinion, it reflects privilege. It reflects people who ideologically just do not live in the same communities, not listen, do not care about the issues that affect a whole generation of people, because the market has been allowed to run riot. There hasn't been the necessary interventions. You know, what you have is a classic example, of society serving the economy rather than the other way around, the economy serving society.
I'll let you answer that because that has come up.
Young people who work, and in this city, comparatively, you could be earning, two professional people could be earning, what would be a fantastic salary in Donegal, but they can't afford to rent, never mind own their own home.
They could be homeless.
They could be homeless. This is madness. And this has gone on now for, 10 years? And here, this is why people are angry. Mm-hmm. This is why people are angry. Not about, sizes and planning development plans, but the fact that the minister just doesn't seem to get it. That's what makes people angry.
Alan?
I'm sorry, was there a question?
Do you want to respond to that? The minister doesn't get it. There are a number of charges there put by Pádraig McLoughlin. Also that Fine Gael is coming from a position of privilege, so you're out of touch.
The general public, I think, is justifiably annoyed about the housing crisis. And I think there has to be an acknowledgement that for 7 or 8 years we didn't build properties, which is why we have this pent-up demand, which is why rents are rising, and which is why all sorts of different views have to be taken on board when putting housing policy together, which is why we're spending 1.3 billion euros on social housing in this country per annum, which is why we will continue to increase the numbers of properties that are being produced for both social, affordable, cost rental, and for private purposes in this state. You know, the CSO have come out with figures in relation to two things that have been really interesting in the last few days, including today, I think. The first one was the housing output figures, which I believe put us at 23,000 houses being produced, which was up nearly 20% on last year.
Yeah, we should be at 35,000.
And the second was the number of persons who are now on the unemployment list, which is now down to 4.6%, 68% of those jobs have been created outside of Dublin. So all of those things provide more taxation for the government to expend.
All right, well, I'll just give you a taste of what's coming in on our text line 51551 or at Late Debate RTE. Sarah, my God, how do anyone expect people to live in shared accommodation? I sincerely hope they're not expecting families to live in shared accommodation. Well, not in this instance, no, because it's only one bed. It's the size of a disabled parking space, or smaller, actually. Would any politician give up their big houses just because their children have grown up and moved out? It's an interesting question.
There are that's something that comes up on the doors. Co-living accommodation is for temporary purposes only.
Would you live there? It is not suitable
for long-term accommodation purposes. Would I live in a smaller property when my children fly the coop? I don't see any reason why it's not something I wouldn't share a kitchen with 40 people. Again, we're going back to the false premise that one planning application makes housing policy, which it doesn't.
I think the issue with this whole anger around it is because we have a housing crisis, and we're talking about co-living situation with 40 people when we should be talking about building single occupancy homes. You're talking about beds since they were put out. We don't have proper bills for single occupancy at all in Dublin. That's why we have people house sharing. And the co-living, yes, there is probably a time and a place for it, but in a functioning market, there needs to be a set of priorities. There needs to be,
accept
okay,
point,
we're going to look at co-living down the line when
accept
we have
your point,
when we have
when
sorted out.
The time is
when there's not 10,000 people on the street, Alan. That's why.
The
time is not now. You know, this is the one policy now that Fine Gael gets excited about, that Alan has attacked the media in terms of their reporting of this. Alan has attacked a professional architect,
Thomas, you've done
and her opinions on it as well, in defence of really a particular project, because we've got one of them at the moment. And I think it's absolutely outrageous that Fine Gael have gone with all guns swinging out this evening and today in relation to this particular project, when all around this country people cannot get homes that they need, and for whom this type of living arrangement would be of no benefit to them whatsoever.
You know what I'm going to say to you, Thomas?
No.
Do you not?
Of course,
really?
No. Ask any question.
That you guys have sat back and supported that, or at least turned a blind eye.
We do not support co-living.
You've allowed it happen. If you're unhappy with what Fine Gael are doing, you have your answer. You know how to finish it.
Sorry, Sarah. We could have had about 35 elections over the last 3 years. Mm. Now, where would that have brought the country? We certainly wouldn't. They probably wouldn't have time.
Possibly, to be believed, under Fianna Fáil, we'd have a better housing situation.
We certainly would understand it, because you know why? Because clearly, Fine Gael public representatives are not meeting people on the ground who are seriously affected by this. I mean, let me ask you, Alan. Has anyone ever come to your clinic to ask for co-living space? Has anyone ever asked for that?
Not that I can think of.
No,
as
nobody
a TD,
has ever
as a
come.
Counsellor, yes.
Nobody has ever come to my clinic looking for co-living. They want a home and they want to be able to live in their
the
communities.
There's a lot of anger of people on the issue of housing. That was reflected on Saturday, where we had a very substantial protest, over 10,000 people at the Raise the Roof protest. And that anger is obviously reflected when canvassing as well. And that anger is directed against Fine Gael. But it is also directed against Fianna Fáil, because people see Fianna Fáil as rightly completely tied into the same policies. And the other area in the context of the local elections is directed towards the councils, whereby the councils are sitting on land banks and have sold off at low prices significant swathes of land to private developers, as opposed to building social and affordable housing on public land.
Which councils?
For example, South Dublin County Council, Kilcarbery the Grange, space for 1,000 homes, and it's sold off to a private developer. It's happened in other councils across the country. And like the idea that at a time of massive crisis that we should be giving away at knockdown prices to private developers.
Is it knockdown prices? They're selling them.
They're selling them at knockdown prices because they
have
a portion of them back as social and affordable.
If they're council-owned land, they must be approved by the local authority members. And if I'm not mistaken, Sinn Féin and the left control South Dublin County Council. So if they were opposed to the disposal of land
in
South Dublin, then I'm sure they would have.
Sinn Féin, unfortunately, first time round, voted for it, for exploring this deal. We weren't in favour of it. We built a campaign.
So it wasn't a knockdown price at all.
Sinn Féin voted against it then the second time.
So it's just a sound
time around, took a better position.
And the truth is,
do you think
councils should be selling off land to private
developers? Well, my local authority facilitated around 6,500 properties to be built on lands between North Swords and Donabate.
And are they all social and affordable?
Facilitated by €15 million.
Are they all social and affordable?
I don't want to go down that route because it's slightly separate to the
very significant.
I'm going to go through some more. The text to 51551 and tweets to @LateDebateRTE. One person says, if the co-living rooms cost 300 a month, that might be a viable option for people. 1300 is obscene. Tell Alan Farrell when you're explaining you're losing. That comes from Circa in Barna in Galway. Another person says, hi Sarah, the governments, regardless of who's in power, are directly responsible for social housing, public health services and education. What part of that statement do politicians not understand? That comes from John in Dublin 11. If the arrogance of the Minister for Housing Housing and Fine Gael continue at this level, they will have their backsides handed to them at the next general election. They've no idea at all what the working person in Ireland has to deal with. That comes from Kate in Tipperary. And just on that point, Alan, the minister, however well-intended I'm sure he is on this, you would have to wonder at his communications of some of these things to suggest to people that they should be excited about paying 1,300 a month to be living.
Your texter from Barna, Sarah, I think it was, said, or Circa said that when you're explaining you're losing, she's not wrong, of course. But unfortunately, when you're sitting opposite three members of the opposition, it's often difficult to get your point across. But what I would say in terms of communication, the minister has said, and the government has said, and the Taoiseach has said, and I have said this evening, that the choices that we are providing the housing market for all citizens in this state, whether they need a one-bedroom apartment, Christina rightly points out, there's not a huge amount of one-bedroom apartments being constructed in the city, and it's something that
Did he get the tone wrong, is what I'm asking, Alan? Well, when he's told people they should be excited at the idea of sharing a kitchen with 40 other people, is he getting the tone wrong? Does he understand at all what people are facing if he's telling them they should be excited about this prospect, whether it goes ahead or not?
The point of diverse housing policy in the context of a housing crisis is that we deliver on all the options available, whether they be a three-bed semi-D, whether it be a terrace, whether it be an apartment complex, whether it be co-living, whether it be cost rental, social or otherwise. The purpose of it all is to try and do as much as we can with the 5.6 billion that's going to be expended on public housing in this country over the next 4 years.
All right. You're not getting away scot-free either. Thomas Bridge says, what planet is Thomas living on? Of course, he and his party are facilitating these policies. Fianna Fáil are in for some lesson on Friday. I, for one, will never vote for them again.
Well, look, I'm very optimistic about our prospects for the election this week. I mean, we've been providing a strong opposition in the Dáil, while also putting the huge pressure, as every party's been doing, on Fine Gael to get it right. But look, we didn't get enough seats the last time. I proposed Micheál Martin in the Dáil 3 times. No other party or member would support us, and that allowed Fine Gael get into power.
We had the alternative of many elections,
but that wasn't...
You've had a while to remedy that now, if you wanted to.
But sorry, we gave a commitment then that we'd do it for 3 years, sure, because we felt it wasn't in the best interest of the country. And Sarah, you can dismiss that in a snide manner, but felt it was in the best interest of the country to do that. Now, if people disagree with that, they have a choice on Friday. But I think people know the responsible role that we have taken. The hard left have been criticising us a lot this week, because I know what they're hearing on the doors.
You're in anger at Fianna Fáil.
The truth is about the hard left is they will oppose everything. They will have the megaphone out. They will protest out.
Keep your text coming. 51551. You can tweet us at Late Debate RTE. Up next, we're going to be talking about whether or not a doctor ever has the right to assist someone in dying.
Email latedebate@rte.ie. The Late Debate with Sarah McInerney on RTE Radio 1.
And just some breaking news here this evening. Donald Trump is coming to Ireland. It has been confirmed. I believe the date is the 5th of June that he's flying into Shannon. Of course, it was anticipated, but it has now been confirmed. So lots to look forward to, folks. What will you be doing, Paul, on that day?
I'll definitely be protesting.
Washing your hair?
Wednesday, Paul. You're going to be in the Dáil.
I think there'll be a major protest. Well, I think it's absolutely correct that people would take the opportunity to send a message to Donald Trump and around the world that his sexist, misogynistic, racist, anti-immigrant, Islamophobic, anti-worker, anti-trade union, anti-woman policies are not welcome here.
Will there be a big protest, do you think?
I think there will be substantial protests. There's talk of very, very big protests happening in London. And I think given that he's actually coming here as well, I think
balloons
will be substantial. Yeah. Hmm?
Balloons?
Who knows, the big blimp may take a trip over here, we'll see.
Thomas, would Micheál Martin meet Donald Trump if he is invited, or should he?
I certainly think that he would. I don't know whether he would be invited or not. I mean, I'm no particular fan of Donald Trump's politics or much of his behaviour, I have to say. I mean, I'd be well known for that, certainly within the party, but at the end of the day, he's the President of the United States of America. And I think that is absolutely crucial for this country to maintain very good relations with the United States of America, and that includes the President and his administration. And it has to be said, a lot of ministers have been making contacts, and even members of my own party. I know that Brendan Smith, our MEP candidate, has been over there as Chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee, meeting the various personalities within the administration who are Irish-American, and trying to develop the links with the Republican side, because obviously a lot of us are, I suppose, in Ireland, very fond of the Democrats, but we've got to make the links with the Republicans as well. Look, we've got to take this seriously. It's the President of the United States coming over. over. There were protests when George Bush came here the last time in a different context, of course, with the Iraq War.
Listen, you have to separate out the office of the President of the United States, but I mean, the man, it's utterly depressing that, you know, there, you know, you think of all the wonderful people and, you know, across the United States to have somebody who, you know, and again...
Should Mary Lou meet him?
Well, you respect the office of the President of the United States. You respect the office, but see the person...
Just to be clear,
I mean, we will be protesting at the visit of Donald Trump to Ireland. What he represents, absolutely. I'll be on protest lines, absolutely, in terms of the politics
not meet him
that
already
he represents.
In, America?
In terms of the politics of what he represents,
we'll be protesting. Met him a few times.
I enjoy Fianna Fáil in relation to... Will you not be protesting about Donald Trump being
No,
Ireland?
I won't be, actually.
You
no.
won't be, no.
No, but,
no.
I, but I won't be like Sinn Féin. You'd be inside the room and outside the room.
Because like, I know Fianna Fáil joined all the water protests, you know, and you jumped on there.
And by the way, sorry, we got the water
charge regime. We're the ones who actually got a change. No one can hear a thing if everyone's talking over each other.
Yeah, well, I didn't interrupt Thomas.
Bork, is there not some hypocrisy there? So you meet Donald Trump and then you protest against Donald Trump.
At the same time.
Well, listen, in terms of the office of the President of the United States, you know, I mean, you know, you have a whole range of presidents that have been met over the years. So, I mean, to be very, very clear, in terms of the man, in terms of his policies, about in terms of what he represents, we will be at every opportunity, be it in protest or it may be in person.
All right, so shake his hand and then go outside
Mary Lou did attend
the Washington DC events there this year. The year before, I think she was snubbed with Arlene Foster somehow. Their invite got lost in the post. I think another year Gerry Adams was left outside the gate of the White House. So there has been precedent, I suppose.
And Donald Trump has gone to Sinn Féin events as well, as I understand it, New York.
Thomas Byrne has interrupted repeatedly because I've said we would meet the office of the President of the United States. And he's criticising Sinn Féin for protesting, which of course Fianna Fáil never do. Fianna Fáil never protest, you know.
All right. I've heard the same line that Pádraig has told us there about the office being different from the person. I've heard that also from the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar.
Yes.
Is that no matter what? You always separate the two? Is there not a point at which you say...
I mean, we're not talking about some Far Eastern, you know, questionable dictator. You know, this is the United States, where we have the Irish diaspora who claim 45 million people. My brother is there, his children.
So needs must.
You know, so it is one of these times where we, perhaps, as the Taoiseach has said, we welcome protest. In relation to meeting Donald Trump, I think it would be a case of taking a deep breath and smiling and shaking hands. But
hold your nose?
Perhaps.
All right. I'm going to move on because we weren't planning on talking to Donald Trump tonight, and no doubt we will be talking about him at length over the next couple of weeks. Lucky us and lucky you. I do want to move on to the issue of the right to die, because today Pope Francis said that people with severe illness should have their lives supported until they reach their natural end. He was commenting following a controversy in France at the moment that's around whether to continue the life support for a man who is in a vegetative state. That man's parents want to keep him alive while his wife and his siblings want to let him die. Now, also over the weekend, Canadian pharmacologist Dr. David Yearlink created a storm on social media when he shared his experience of assisting the death of his octogenarian patient. And we've voiced up a little of what he had to say.
She came to hospital, as octogenarians often do, with generalised weakness, falls, fever. Even moving around in her hospital bed was agonising. We got her pain under reasonable control, but then came the big question. Now what? She foresaw being confined to her apartment in pain, struggling with her walker. She wasn't interested in living like that. We discussed palliative care. She wasn't interested in dying like that. So we held a family meeting. Relatives came from near and far. They were unconditionally supportive. I saw her every day after that. Never once did she reconsider. After the requisite waiting period and medical assessments, the day had come. Her room was packed with family and friends. It was literally a party. A colleague reviewed everything one last time. "Okay, I'm ready," she said. "Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for everything. I love you all." 5 minutes after saying goodbye, she was dead. This was, without exaggeration, the best death I have ever witnessed.
Hard to disagree with that case, at least, Alan, when you hear it elucidated so eloquently.
Yeah, it's very difficult. I read that on Twitter a few days ago whenever it popped up. It somehow managed to pop up in my feed. But and I was taken aback, and I must admit I stopped reading it after a certain point. It is a debate that raises its head in Ireland every now and again, assisted suicide, that is. We've had court cases, as I understand it, and it's a difficult one. I think it's a conversation that we probably need to have in the Oireachtas at some point in the near future. But it has to be one of those conversations that we have had successfully in recent years, where we come to it from all directions and agree a mutual pathway, not just because of a political requirement for that, but because it's such a profound thing to do, to assist a person in the ending of their life. There has to be certain cases where an individual, whether they be in a vegetative state or whether they be unable to sustain life beyond a certain point. We've had debates about quality of life issues and whether that justifies it. But I do think, as somebody who's, has held the hand of somebody who's going through the end of life process, it's particularly taxing, to say the least. But I do think that we have the ability to do it, and in recent years we've proven.
So something that should be considered and discussed, do you think?
I do, I agree.
All right, Paul Murphy?
Yeah, a friend of mine, Gail O'Rourke, was prosecuted for assisting suicide of a friend of hers who is in the latter stage of MS. She was ultimately acquitted after an 8-week trial, but if she'd been convicted, if they found her guilty of assisting suicide, she could have gone to prison for 12 years. Obviously, there was the other case of Mary Fleming, which was very high profile. Mm-hmm. And I think, obviously, the Pope is entitled to the views that he has, and Catholics are entitled to, go along with those views if they choose to do so. But I don't think we should be criminalising people for assisting suicide in cases where someone wants to die in dignity. And you should have the
slippery
right...
Slippery slope?
I don't think so. For example, in Oregon, they have a right to die law, and they have extensive precautions in terms of you have to, say it twice independently to doctors, you need to be independently verified, you have to be in a stage of terminal illness.
And sort of like the abortion legislation, have the safeguards in place.
I think you need safeguards in place. I mean, I'm against the so-called safeguards in place in the abortion legislation.
Also, with that referendum, there was a huge amount of discussion and debate for quite a long period before we actually made the decision last year. Also, about abortion, whatever your views on the issue, there was unquestionably a huge amount of abortion taking place in the UK and through tablets coming into the country as well. So I don't know what the statistics are at the moment in terms of whether this is a feature in Ireland. So I think I have no problem having a discussion. I think the Justice Committee did have a discussion on it.
Junior Minister John Halligan has been pretty vocal over the last number of years. So someone who said that he was quite vocal about it very early on after the election, and he had right to Dying with Dignity Bill in 2015. Mm-hmm. And then, there's a lot of discussion about that. He worked with Tom Curran, who was Mary Fleming's wife at the time, on that bill. And there was discussion in the Justice Committee, but it very much seemed to fall aside and dissipate.
Let's word pork on this.
I think that this is one to convene the Citizens' Assembly on, in the way that we dealt with the repeal of the If Amendment issue, but is one that I think a lot of people were deeply moved by the Mary Fleming case, deeply moved by it, and I think it's one that we need to revisit and address in due course.
There are people out there who don't have appropriate hospice and end-of-life care at the moment, and I think that is also something that should be very much part of this debate as well.
All right, something that all the politicians think need to be discussed, so no doubt maybe that is something that will be looked at by the Oireachtas again. Do stay with us. We're going to take a quick break, and after that we're going to be finding out how the debate, the last EU TV debate, ended.
Tweet at Late Debate RTE. The Late Debate with Sarah McInerney on RTE Radio 1.
Now, the EU TV debate for Midlands North West is over. AB Philba Bowman was keeping an eye on it upstairs for us. AB, what happened?
There were two really big themes in this debate, Brexit and migration. I'll fly through them. Luke McFlanagan at the very beginning was challenged for supporting Brexit. He said he did that. He hoped it would give a jolt to the notion of ever closer union, and he didn't want full fiscal or military union. Fianna Fáil's Brendan Smith, who's quite pro-EU, conceded Irish people don't want ever closer union. Sinn Féin's Matt Carty, who would be Eurocritical, conceded the EU has often been the best guarantor of workers' rights. The Green Green Station McHugh wants Ireland to cooperate more at EU level on corporate tax and climate action. Mairead McGuinness of Fine Gael called for a union of people. Labour's Dominic Hannigan pointed out that with Britain's departure, we've lost a key ally against closer European integration. And then David McCullough challenged Peter Casey for holding a variety of views on Europe and whether Brexit was good or bad. And he kept saying, we need to get whatever deal Britain gets. And it was pointed out to him, that's a deal for a country that's leaving, but he kept saying, we need to get the deal that Britain gets. On migration, as Cyril Brennan of People Before Profit said that direct provision centres would be the mother and baby homes of our generation. Sinn Féin's Matt Carthy claimed only Fianna Fáil could build a system for direct provision that made millionaires out of that system. Peter Casey said that 85% of deportation orders aren't enforced. He said, we do have a skill shortage. We need people. We can accommodate more because we had more in the 1830s, 4 million more. He said they're either legal and they get a passport or they're illegal and they get a plane ticket. That point about there being a skill shortage was the one thing all night that he agreed with Mairead McGuinness on. And Luke McFlanagan said that people aren't entitled to social welfare when they get here. For the first 3 months, they get paid by the home country. And after that, they can be asked to leave if they can't support themselves. Also those short video, almost like dating videos where the candidates get 1 minute. And I have to give top marks to Fidel Mahili Eames, who mentioned the most number of voting demographics in that 1 minute. She mentioned being from a farming background, being a Galway girl, being married, being a mother, a teacher, a PhD in education, a senator, pro-life, former Fine Gael, the Dublin Centre government don't get it, and rural towns are dying and beef farmers are in crisis. I mean, that was an amazing use of 1 minute, I thought, for my money. So, and then of course the other candidates also got a ref their minute as well.
All right, so no knockout blow, but a very comprehensive rundown, AB. Thank you very much. In 2 minutes, there you go. You didn't need to watch it. Just come to the late debate. Listen, thank you all very much. Thank you to my panel for joining me. That's all we have time for tonight. We will be back tomorrow at 10 p.m. as usual. Tonight's programme was produced by Brian Lally. Research was by AB Philbin-Bowman. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan, and Pather Carney was on sound. It's now over to Cathal Murray on Late Date.